Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and brought to you for once, not from the All England Lawn Tennis and Croquet Club, because David and I are in our respective homes, me in London and David in, well, sunny Birmingham. David, is it sunny?
I'd go as far as to say glorious. Glorious. This is the sort of thing that people on the weather forecasts just call a heat wave and newspaper headlines call it scorcher.
Yes, for once the weather is front page news, which is nice to see. And it has been a glorious weekend of sport. Davis Cup tennis has played a very significant part of that. But what a weekend of sport, for one thing, it was with, you know, the Open Golf, the Test match at Lord's. There was drama in the Tour de France with Chris Froome walking part of the stage. I mean, it's just been the most fantastic advertisement for sport over the past few days, and it's fantastic that the Davis Cup has played such a big part in that. We, being the biased British people that we are going to deal with the GB-Serbia tie first, and I think that's deserved because it was a fantastic tie, and in particular a fantastic tie for Mr. Kyle Edmund. Wasn't he good? I remember when we were up in Glasgow, David, for the semi-final last year against Australia, and there was talk about whether or not Kyle Edmund, he was named in the team, but he actually didn't end up playing any of those matches in that tie. And there was talk potentially of him being put forward. And the word was that he just wasn't ready for it mentally. He wasn't ready for the pressure. He was getting very stressed out by it. Well, how, if that is the case, and those were just, you know, rumours behind the scenes, what a remarkable transformation development it has been then for Kyle Edmund over the past, what, 9 months, because he was solid as a rock yesterday, barring that one wobble when he served out for the match, which he more than rectified in that tie break. He had a sensational tie, didn't he?
Thing is, I think his game has come on in leaps and bounds over the last 18 months anyway, but I think what you've just said is bang on in terms of his personal maturity. I think he has just become a man in that space of time, an adult, and he can deal with situations now. I think he was overwhelmed a year ago or just over a year ago in that situation. And funnily enough, when he was asked about Kyle Edmund, Janko Tipsarevic said on the eve of this tournament that he looks about 12 years old, Kyle Edmund. And he does have that sort of boyish look, obviously fair hair and fair skin and so forth as well. But he didn't play like that. He didn't play like that at all. He was bossing both of the matches that he played against good players. Obviously a former top 10 player, not playing anything like as well in Tipsarevic, who doesn't like those sort of heavy, cloyed sort of clay court conditions. But he managed to get through that comfortably, did Edmund. And then in the reverse singles match against Lajovic, who really played well against a woefully out of sorts James Ward, he dominated him as well. So This guy can play on clay. I mean, if he played Andy Murray on clay, I think it would be a really close match, because he just looks more and more like Jim Courier as a tennis player every time I see him. He just masters the centre of the court, hitting those inside-out forehands and then having the ability to go the other way as well, then camping himself out in the backhand corner to hit those diagonal inside-out forehands. And he's a formidable foe on clay, and I think the way he stood up after being broken back in that third set by Lajovic, when the crowd was starting to come to life, was a masterclass in keeping your nerve. I got into the car just when it was, I think he was sort of 6-5 down, and he was struggling to hold on in that set, Edmund. And by the time I got home, 5 to 10 minutes later, it was over.
On the subject of that forehand, David, I mean, I know it's easy to get wrapped up in hyperbole. He had a fantastic tie. He is still, you know, where he is in the world. He's on the rise, though, without question, you know, and the extent of his potential, I think, remains to be seen. But just on the subject of that forehand, is there a bigger forehand on the tour at the moment? On the evidence of what I saw yesterday, I mean, he did admit to Russell Fuller pretty much in his post-match interview with him that is the hardest he has ever hit his forehand in a match situation. He said he tries to practice hitting it that hard because you can't go into a match situation and try out something that you haven't in practice. But on the evidence of yesterday and that match against Dusan Lajovic, is there a bigger forehand on tour at the moment?
I would say there most certainly is. I think there are bigger shots than that. And the way I would justify that view is that when he played against Thomas Burdick earlier this year, when we were also bigging up the Kyle Edmund forehand, particularly after the way he dismissed Andy Murray in the tiebreak tens final at the Royal Albert Hall at the end of last year, when he then faced Burdick, who was just like a bigger, stronger version of himself, you then saw the limitations, certainly in terms of his development. So I think he's moved on from there. I think on clay it is a very big shot, but I think it's a big shot when you have two players who are kind of feeding that shot without one of their own. I think if you stuck another one up there of that level, that would be another test for it.
I think that's true. I don't think it's necessarily the best forehand, but in terms of just explosion and producing power, I guess it's because, as you were describing, he doesn't look like somebody that's going to have an absolute monster of a shot. He isn't a particularly intimidating presence on the court. And then that forehand comes out and you just think, where on earth has that come from? In terms of sort of explosive power, I find it incredible. And I do think, I watched that match live with Burdick in Doha earlier this year. And for me, Kyle Edmund is... I remember we did a podcast after that, and I at the time I said I spoke to Kyle afterwards, and he already had a furrowed brow and was thinking, how can I learn from this? How can I learn from this? Well, boy, has he learned from it, because he looked a different player yesterday. And yes, you're right, the conditions all played into his hands. He is a different animal on clay. And to be fair, exactly as you just described, Lajovic was at times feeding the forehand. It wasn't particularly smart play, I don't think, from Lajovic. But nonetheless, sort of in a vacuum, that forehand is an immense shot.
It's quite similar to the other player we'll end up talking about as part of the Davis Cup roundup here, which is Jack Sock. That extraordinary arm speed, that liveliness of the arm. Kyrgios has got it as well, that feeling that they're whiplashing through the ball, putting extraordinary rotation on it. I kind of feel as though Edmunds is maybe one of the most reliable of those types of shots. He doesn't feel like he's going to top edge that many. I think it does have limitations in that we saw it at Wimbledon, and he struggled against Mannarino, who was playing those sort of flat, low, angled balls to him. I think grass may provide him with challenges in that way. But, you know, stick him on 75% of the surfaces on the tennis circuit, and it's a formidable weapon. It's, you know, you're going to be seeing a lot of that for the next 10 years.
Well, he did very, very well, Kyle Edmund. He contributed 2 wins. Of course, the doubles boys did very well as well. Jamie Murray and Dom Inglot, they deserve a mention. But a big team effort to produce a Davis Cup quarterfinal victory without Andy Murray, which is incredibly significant. Yes, we'll come on to the fact that he was there and how impressive it was for him to be there and to participate in the team spirit, the team mentality, something which many people were reporting seemed to be missing from the Serbian team. But it is incredibly significant, I think, and important, actually, for this GB Davis Cup team, if it is a Davis Cup team that goes on to win other Davis Cup titles. You know, they've made their intent clear. They don't want to be a flash in the pan Davis Cup winning team. And I think for that to be the case, this was a really important victory to show that they can do this without Andy Murray, and that they do now have some depth. And they really do. You know, Dan Evans, top 100 player, well inside the top 100 now after his Wimbledon showing, was injured. They did it without him as well. You know, this, for me, is quite important for this GB team.
One of its biggest wins, I would say. Obviously, the final last year, everybody will remember, because it never happened in our lifetime, so it had it for Great Britain to have done that. But as you said, this was a bit like the Russia tie when Britain won the tie from two down on that occasion without Andy Murray available. This was their first World Group victory without an Andy Murray in the team since 1986. 30 years. Andy Murray wasn't even born. Tim Hemman and Greg Rozedsky couldn't manage this, even when they were at the peak of their powers, to win a World Group tie. And that's what Edmund and Ward, okay, maybe not his greatest weekend, but he was there, he put his hand up, he was out there slogging his guts out, and obviously the excellent doubles team of Inglot and Murray, that's what they were able to do. It's a major, major result, and another example of the captaincy of Leon Smith, who has won 14 out of 16 ties that he's presided over. I mean, that's an extraordinary record.
And a word from you on the fact that Andy Murray was there doing his bit, if not on the court, then certainly off it. And on the fact that, of course, Djokovic and, it must be said, Troicki weren't, and the sort of report suggestions we've heard that morale was not the best, by contrast, in the Serbian team.
I do find it amazing that Murray did that. I think he never really ceases to surprise us within the media, who, you know, you'd kind of think we'd have a pretty decent handle on what the guy might do, given that we follow his every move. And yet he still surprises us virtually every month, it seems. And this was another one of those. I mean, I did think when we were going through Wimbledon, I still thought he might play. And then it got so, obviously, him getting to the final. Then when you look at the actual turnaround and consider the surfaces that we're talking about here, from grass to clay and the trouble that gives him and all the rest that's on the horizon, it was a sensible move not to play in that wider scheme of things. And obviously, it's all sort of played out as they would have hoped, because Britain have won anyway. But to then say, you know, I've just had two of the most grueling weeks of my career following a win, the fifth title victory at the Aegon Championships at Queen's, following reaching the final of the French Open for the first time, when you've got a baby that is, what, 6 months old, and you say to your team, I am going to be there. I'm going to be there in your corner. How must that make them feel? That's how important they are to him. And I find that really something. I'm not going to sit here and have a go at Novak Djokovic or Troicki. I don't know what his story is. The reason I wouldn't have a go at Djokovic is, frankly, he's done what the vast majority do, which is win Davis Cup, tick that box and say, right, that's kind of that. And I'll play sporadically when I can, just like Federer did for all those years. He played the first round, made sure that Switzerland were in the world group, then took his chance to win the Davis Cup, and then basically bagged it again. And I'm sure he'll pop up again, maybe from time to time. That's what most players do. I don't want to criticise them. What I do want to do is just, frankly, take the hat off to Andy Murray, because I'm not sure I'd have done that. I think that's an amazing show of solidarity and teamwork for his group.
I couldn't agree with you more, David. And GB's reward, Andy Murray, Kyle Edmund, James Ward, Dan Evans, Dom Inglot, Jamie Murray, Leon Smith, their reward is now another semi-final at home to Argentina. Now, Argentina did fantastically to beat Italy. At home, Italy were. And in terms of players that play above themselves, that rise to the Davis Cup occasion, I think Federico Del Bonis has to be put in the top bracket, because he beat Andrea Seppi and Fabio Fognini in that tie. It was 3-1 in the end. They didn't play the final rubber. Argentina's won the doubles, and Fabio Fognini got one sole victory for the Italians over Juan Monaco in the singles. But yeah, Federico Del Bonis, what a fantastic servant he is for Argentina's Davis Cup team. They will now come and play Great Britain in a semi-final, third week in September. Where's it going to be, David? What surface is it going to be on? Who's going to play?
Yeah, good question. First of all, I couldn't agree more. Del Bonis, what a year he's having. He, of course, beat Andy Murray as well earlier this year, and the rest of their team as well. To go to Italy, this is something, let's not forget, that Great Britain tried to do, and it's one of Leon Smith's two defeats as captain, and that was with Andy Murray in the team, and they could not beat Italy away. They came close, they were 2-1 up. Argentina did it, and I think that is a fantastic achievement. It's going to be interesting now. It's going to be September the 18th to the 20th, I believe, the semi-final. It comes 3 days after Andy Murray Live, the exhibition that he's putting on in Scotland. So whether they will in some way try to find a tie-up there and be able to stay up there and play the tie. I'm sure there would be an amazing atmosphere if they did. That's at the Hydro, is the exhibition. But obviously the Birmingham tie went pretty well. There's Manchester that might have its hand in the air. Very difficult to know which location they'll go for. I'd be very surprised, personally, if it wasn't a fast as they can make it indoor surface.
Not grass?
I think the only way you could play grass with any degree of confidence weather-wise is to stick it under the roof at Wimbledon.
Do you think that would be on the table in the conversation, at least in terms of venues?
I'd personally be surprised. I mean, I'm sure it'll get covered in the conversation, but I just think that they've done so well indoors in various parts of the country. I'd be surprised if they didn't go back to that, given that they beat last year the United States and Australia in those exact conditions, and of course Japan this year. I think these, and actually, you know, if you think about Edmund, I think he's going to play better indoors myself, where you've got that sort of reliable surface and his forehand can get through it, and obviously you've also got the option of Dan Evans too. So I'd expect them to go that route.
Well, as and when that gets decided and announced, we'll of course discuss it here on the podcast. The other semi-final will be between France, David. France, who beat the Czech Republic 3-1. Fantastic results by Lucas Pouille. He really came through. Songa beat Vezeli, two defeats for Vezeli, in fact. And of course, they won that doubles with the strongest doubles team in the world right now, Herbert and Mahut, beating Rossel and Stepanek. Rossel did score a fantastic five-set victory over Songa, it has to be said, to get Czech Republic's one victory in that, but a strong win for France. Now they will take on, David, Croatia, who performed a quite remarkable comeback from 2-0 down after the Friday night to defeat the USA. And I'm just going to let you go on this. You just wax lyrical as much as you like. David, for anyone that doesn't know, is sort of an honorary Croatian. So off you go, David.
Well, first of all, the United States, to put this achievement of the comeback of Croatia into perspective, they, I think, United States, were 157 wins and 3 defeats over the course of history when they were 2-0 up in the Davis Cup. So this is only the fourth time it's ever happened. And the way those first two rubbers went, with a resounding win for Isner over Borna Coric, a comeback win for Jack Sock from two sets to love down against Marin Cilic. So it happened basically again to Cilic within the space of a week after the Federer defeat. And, I mean, really, that looked to be it, because really Croatia would have expected to at least have got one point out of those two. And then you go into a doubles match with the Bryan brothers. It doesn't feel too good, does it, for a team on the end of that? And they decided to draft in Cilic for the doubles. That wasn't the initial plan, I don't think. And so he played the doubles. They won that, did Croatia. And then I saw both of the reverse singles last night. And the standard of tennis of Isner in the first set was really something. He was winning more points against Cilic, but he just couldn't get the break. So often that is the case with him, of course. In the tiebreak, it was a cracking tiebreak. It was 11-9, I think, to Cilic in the end. And after that, it really was all Cilic. And it was US Open winning Marin Cilic. I tell you, if that guy starts to play tennis like this over the next 6 weeks, he could win some big titles. Whether it's the Olympics, whether it's one of the Masters Series events, whether it's the US Open itself. I'd be very surprised if he's producing that level of tennis if he doesn't win one of those titles. The big surprise to me was, once he'd levelled it at 2-2, Jack Sock going into a match against Borna Coric, who frankly hasn't been in the greatest of form this year. I think he's actually less than 50-50 for wins this year. And he was psyched up beyond belief when he came out, Borna Coric. I'm trying to think of players who move better than him, and really there's only Nadal, Djokovic and Murray that maybe move better than him, and I think that got inside Jack Sock's head. Sock looked tight from the very first ball. I think I don't think he expected to be playing. I do not think he expected to be playing on Sunday, and I think that must have been.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Been a shock to the system when he started to, they probably had the feet up a bit on Sunday, even if not on Saturday, rather, even if not deliberately. Oh, we're 2-0 up. Now it's the Bryan brothers. Go and finish the job. And it didn't happen. It just shows how hard it is to then gather yourself and win a fifth rubber. So an amazing comeback for Croatia. Huge blow to the United States, having beaten, I think it was Australia in the first round, wasn't it? In Australia.
It was.
And to have then lost this one, I mean, Jim Courier no longer wearing the suit. He was there doing what he could. I can't imagine how he must have felt speaking to Jack Sock and not being able to get out of him the sort of performance that I think he would have been able to produce himself in that very same situation. So, yeah, back to the drawing board for the United States, but that's a huge win for Croatia. And you know what? You could make a case. I don't see Argentina beating Britain personally, if particularly if Murray plays. But you could make a strong case for either Croatia or France.
Crikey, David, who do you support in a GB Croatia final?
I don't support anybody, Catherine Whittaker. I'm a commentator who will just call it as I see it.
Oh, yeah. Completely neutral. You're like Switzerland.
Yeah, that's me. But, I do have a soft spot for Croatia in terms of family members and friends and so forth. But even so, it was just a great occasion. I really enjoyed it.
It was the video. If you didn't have a chance to watch the tie, then just try and catch the video of match point and Borna Čorić's celebrations in the moments in the immediate aftermath of victory, because they're quite something and a fabulous advertisement for the Davis Cup. I mean, in fact, I think this whole weekend has been particularly seeing the young players being the match winners. You know, Luka Puy for France, Borna Čorić for Croatia, and Kyle Edmund for Great Britain. You know, Davis Cup can make, well, we've of course seen it break young players as well. But it's some really fantastic scenes all around.
Can I just say as well, Catherine, I mean, I think let's not avoid the fact either that there were some significant withdrawals from the Davis Cup in this round of play. Obviously, Andy Murray went, but he didn't play. Novak Djokovic didn't play. The event has got its issues at the moment because of these withdrawals, and it's been like that for a while. I do feel that people are getting perhaps a little too sniffy about that fact, though, and trying to take away too much from the achievements of some of these players. You can only beat who's in front of you. Fields get depleted in Grand Slams. Yes, it's a shame that people are withdrawing, and yes, I think that the Davis Cup needs to do something to try to improve its format so that those withdrawals are reduced. But still, those were great weekends on a certain level and excellent achievements too.
Very well said, David. There have been other things happening in tennis this week, a few other notable announcements, bits of news. First and foremost, David, Victoria Azarenka, we're not going to be seeing her on the tour for a while because she is pregnant. She's expecting her first baby in November. How long exactly she'll be out for, we don't know. I'm sure she doesn't know. She has fully stated her intention to come back at some stage, I'm sure. Once she does feel ready to come back, she will be looking to, if not calling up, Kim Clijsters to seek some advice from her, because she, of course, is the model for a tennis player to have had children and to have come back, come back even stronger in the case of Kim Clijsters. I mean, there's not much to say. Obviously, very happy for her. She's delighted by the news. It's all great. It's a shame for tennis, I think, because I think Victoria Azarenka is great for women's tennis. She's a very genuine challenger to Serena Williams, and that's a really good thing. I think possibly even Serena would see that as a good thing. So it'll just be a shame for women's tennis, I think, that she won't be around for a while. But I fully expect her, as she says she intends, to come back and to come back pretty strong. You know, if you look at it from the Roger Federer perspective of, you have a finite canister of tennis playing career, you know, I suppose she's just preserving some of the canister for later on in her career. I mean, who knows? Who knows how it'll end up? But I don't doubt that if she feels so inclined, she can come back to somewhere near the top.
First of all, Catherine, can I just say, canister is now a favourite word of ATP Tour supervisor and long-time chair umpire Lars Graf. Every time I see him, he comes up to me and says, canister.
Well, it's sort of my favourite word as well. If you notice, I've been trying to work it into as many many podcasts as possible. It's a great word.
I don't really know how to use it, to be honest, Lars, but you seem to be using it all the time. And thanks for listening to the Tennis Podcast. That's all I can say. A regular is Lars Graf. But on the subject of Victoria Azarenka being pregnant, congratulations to her. Fantastic news. She's clearly delighted, stated so on social media. It is a shame in terms of what was building in the tennis world, in terms of her re-emergence as a major force, which was happening at the start of this year with those back-to-back wins in Indian Wells and Miami. But this is life, isn't it? And fantastic news for her. And yeah, hope she comes back as well.
Couple of other bits of business before I hand over the Twitter reins to you, David. That feels like it's a quite dangerous thing to do. I know there'd be some polls in there, but, you know, just a couple of other bits of business before I do that. Ivo Karlovic has become the oldest title winner for 37 years on the ATP World Tour. He beat Gilles Mullet to win the title in Newport. Well done him. 37 years old and 5 months. But, you know, with his style of play, you would expect it to be the sort of game that does age well, and I don't expect him to go anywhere anytime soon. And just a final slightly sad note, which is we've seen some, probably the most significant withdrawals we've had so far from the Olympics. Milos Raonic, Thomas Berdych and Simona Halep have announced that they won't be playing the Olympics in Rio, citing the Zika virus as their reason. Now, I don't doubt that the Zika virus absolutely is their reason. I'm not questioning that for a moment. My take on it is, though, that players in other sports, athletes, you know, for example, I think the best example is open water swimmers, for whom the Olympics is the unequivocal pinnacle of their sport. And they are at the highest rate of exposure, at the greatest risk of Zika, being open water swimmers. It's not a purely waterborne disease, but I understand that it is more easily contracted if you are in contact with water. None of them have withdrawn, and I'm sort of loath to quote Rory McIlroy, because I'm disappointed in him for not playing the Olympics. However, In his explanation of not playing, he said it's as simple as risk and reward. And the risk of Zika it outweighs the reward of winning the Olympics. And I think that's just what it comes down to. The decision has been made on the basis of the risks of the Zika virus, which I completely respect. However, were the reward considered that bit greater? And I do think it is considered a great reward, an Olympic gold medal, and it's growing in stature all the time. I do see this as a slightly backward step in terms of that stature. In London, the Olympics, Andy Murray winning and what that propelled him on to do, that for me felt like the huge turning point for Olympic tennis, the moment that it did stand alongside Grand Slams. And for me, this is just a slight backward step, and that's a shame. They are extraordinary circumstances, but for me, it can't help but be an indication that they just don't see that reward as quite great enough when stacked up against the risk.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably about right. And I think it also points to the problems of the tennis calendar in trying to cram the the Olympics in with everything else, particularly it is when it is not necessarily right down the road from wherever they happen to be playing their other events. I mean, some of these events are going to suffer no matter what. There are going to be withdrawals from Toronto. I read a tweet yesterday saying that Jamie Delgado was talking about Andy Murray practicing in Mallorca next week, which would suggest that Toronto may not happen for him. Other players are going to pull out from Cincinnati. I do feel that some players probably are going to look at the Olympics and think, well, given that risk, and it is a bit scary to us, is it worth it? And some will decide that it is because it's maybe the last remaining achievement for them in their career or something they really want to do, and they'll just suck it up and do it anyway and hope for the best and take all precautions that they can. But it is a shame. I do think it is a small backward step in tennis, and look, it may get worse. There may be a lot more withdrawals yet.
There may be. I certainly hope there aren't, but you know, we have to respect individual athletes' decisions, and it's just a shame is the bottom line. It's just a shame, but hopefully enough of the top players will play that it will still be a very significant and interesting event. That is it for sort of news, David, for tennis news, but I believe you've been pretty active on Twitter this week. Do you want to bring us an update of what people have been saying?
Would you like me, Catherine, to take you into the pole vault?
Oh my goodness, absolutely not is the answer to that.
Well, you're in it, and it's our new section on the
no,
Tennis
it's
Podcast.
Not.
Catherine Whittaker's only just discovered that we have something on the Tennis Podcast called the Pole Vault. Here it is. So I asked
this
everybody
on Twitter. This
is an
ambush, David. This is
it
an
is,
ambush.
Yeah, and now you can't get out of it because everybody is witnessing, and there are many thousands that listen to the Tennis Podcast every week, and they're all up for it now, except you. Anyway, I asked on Twitter, at Tennis Podcast, at the start of the week, just after Andy Murray had won the Wimbledon title, I asked Andy Murray, or I said Andy Murray will be world number one either by the end of 2016, by the end of 2017, later or never. Which one are you going for, Catherine?
I think he will get there. I'm not sure how long he'll stay there for. I think he might sneak in for a few weeks at some stage. It's just, for me, it's between by the end of 2017 and late. I'll go for by the end of 2017. There we go.
Well, you are with the majority, Catherine, because 43% have said exactly that. 11% think he'll do it this year. 13% think he'll do it after 2017. And 33% think he will never do it. I think he'll do it next year. Personally, I think the way the points are stacking up, and I think he's about 900 points behind Novak Djokovic on the year race to London just at the moment, so that suggests that he's not too far away, and we still have the Olympics to come. We still have, although there's no, it's not about ranking points obviously there, we still have the US Open to come, we still have the Tour Finals and other major events as well. But I think there's a feeling of consistency about Murray right now in everything he does, in his game, in his mentality, and obviously he's got to stay fit. But I think he's about to have, may well be the strongest period of his career right now. I think that's what's going to happen. Anyway,
I don't disagree. I certainly question the 11% that think it could happen this year, because I think mathematically Djokovic would sort of have to not play for most of the rest of the year for it to happen this year.
Plus, we've got the Davis Cup now that Andy Murray is likely to play in September, and I think he's going to have to withdraw from something in order to make way for the Olympics too. So, I agree. I think this year will come too soon. I've also been asking Catherine Whittaker, by the end of 2018, the following player will have won a Grand Slam tournament: Kyrgios, Zverev, both, or neither. What do you think?
So, by the end of 2018, so that's 2.5 years away. The horse I'm backing out of those most strongly is Zverev. I think he's a future number one. I see Kyrgios as a Safin type. I think he will potentially win a slam or two. I don't see him having the consistency unless something really significant changes. I mean, look, he could come out and win the US Open this year. He could.
So this is where I stand. You mentioned Safin. I'd agree with the comparison. I think, therefore, it is more likely that Kyrgios wins a slam in the next 2.5 years than Zverev.
Yeah. I suppose on the basis of my own logic, that is true. I just don't necessarily think I want to predict that. I think by the end of 2018 might be just a bit too soon for Zverev. I think sort of 2019 is going to be his year. I think by 2019, he might be in Djokovic-type domination mode.
So which one are you going for then?
Which one am I going for? Oh, go on then. I'll go for Kyrgios, lest I contradict my own logic.
I enjoy it when you end up contradicting yourself after I've had my say. Perfect. Anyway, I totally agree. Kyrgios. Anyway, I've got some more entries into the poll vault, everybody. You'll be pleased to know. Andy Murray fans, your man can win one more thing this year. Which one are you going to choose? Now, Catherine, you can't answer this because he's not your player as such. This is one for the fans of these specific players. I just thought you'd be interested to hear this. If Andy Murray fans could choose Andy Murray to win the Davis Cup, Olympic gold, or the US Open this year, which one would they go for? Which one do you think they would go for, Catherine?
I think it has to be the US Open.
Yeah, 69% went for the US Open, 26% went for Olympic gold, just 5% went for the Davis Cup, although I should say that that was registered before the quarterfinal. I asked the same thing of Novak Djokovic fans. What do you think, Olympic gold or the US Open? Which one are Djokovic fans most wanting their player to win this year?
Oh, that's significantly tougher. I'm going to go Olympic gold.
Yeah, 64% said Olympic gold, and there were hundreds of people entering this. 36% said the US Open. And Roger Federer fans, Olympic gold or the US Open. 663 votes for this one. Which one do you think Federer fans have gone for?
US Open. US Open, for sure.
Just, 52%. Because Roger Federer has never won a singles Olympic gold, let's not forget.
I'm aware of that, and I think both pretty high on the Roger Federer wish list. But it has to be about racking up the Grand Slam tally. It has to be, you know, the whole narrative with Federer has been the one more slam, hasn't it, for 4 years now. I think it has to be the US Open.
Well, it was. 52% said the US Open, 48% went Olympic gold, but frankly, they'd have both. That's just fine. Now, a couple of questions to finish off. We asked for them and we had loads, but here's just a couple. Let's see what Catherine thinks. Do you think, Hugo says, do you think Raonic will make multiple slam finals? How big is his window? I think, Catherine Whittaker, that he will make multiple slam finals. No question. Well, he's already won one. He only needs to win one more. I think he'll win. Sorry, I think he'll reach three or four more at least.
Well, he only has to reach one more to have reached multiple slam finals. And I certainly think he will reach at least one more Grand Slam final. So, yes, is the answer. I think he'll reach a few more.
OK. Lynn says, do you agree with Jamie Baker, the former British player, that Andy Murray's next priority is doubles gold with Jamie? That's an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, imagine how much he would enjoy that.
I certainly think it is a major, major priority for Andy Murray. Be a really difficult one if you offered Andy US Open or doubles with Jamie, because obviously, you know, there's the whole... I mean, that's Sophie's choice, isn't it? I'm sorry I even mentioned that, because you've got your brother's happiness depending on your decision as well. So I'll park that one, but I will agree with Jamie Baker that I think that is a massive target for Andy Murray. I think it was gutting for them to lose first round in London. I know that was during the Jamie Murray wilderness years, and it's a very different story now, and they're a very, very well-worn doubles team now. I think it's a huge goal for both of them.
I agree. Thomas Bartley just finally says, will Simona Halep finally cross the large hurdle of winning a Grand Slam title? I find this interesting because I think if we went back 15 months, I think we did a show where we asked this question, and I'm pretty sure I said that Simona Halep would win a Grand Slam title within 2 years. So I think we're going back 15 months. I'm really not confident that she will. I think she has the ability, both at the Australian and the US Open, if she gets a bit of luck and Serena isn't in the way and so forth, but she isn't as convincing to me right now as she was just over a year ago.
I agree. I sort of always just assumed that she would, until perhaps 2 or 3 months ago it started to occur to me that maybe she wouldn't, and that maybe she was going backwards a bit, you know, becoming a player that reaches quarterfinals but doesn't necessarily push on. I think Darren Cahill could be the difference maker here. I do think she's improved, and I think if he can get her over that enormous mental hurdle, and frankly, the longer it goes on without her winning one, that mental baggage will grow. So he has got a task on his hands, Darren Cahill, but I do think he could be what makes the difference and gets her over the line.
I agree. So, Catherine, there we are. That's it. We'll be back in the pole vault next week.
Subject to discussion between the two presenters. We have been the Tennis Podcast. We've been brought to you in association with The Telegraph, and we'll be back next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.